my commentary in a moment, but first, there was a time when Americans pulled together in the face of danger. But we see in this COVID-19 pandemic that that time has passed. It is hard for me to understand why our fellow citizens resist efforts to curb this virus. It is a simple thing to do, to wear a mask when outside and around others, and to practice distancing. Yet many Americans rebel against it, citing their freedom to do as they please. I understand that, but when you do as you please and it infects other innocent people, the attitude is hard to understand. Of course you have the right to dismiss the mask and press up near anyone you want to. But why do you feel the need to do that? I'm not condemning anyone, but me and my family will show courtesy to others when we leave our house. We will wear the mask. We will practice distancing. I give credit today to Laura Hollis of NWI Times and Ted Noel of Town Hall for their contribution to my commentary today. As misguided people continue to call for defunding the police, the number of crimes and shootings are soaring. While organized groups like Black Lives Matter block streets and march in protests against a rare police shooting of blacks, they totally ignore the real danger to black lives, black thugs. Over the Father's Day weekend in Chicago, more than 100 people were shot, and 14 black people were killed. That's in one weekend, and that's not a rare occurrence in Chicago. Each weekend sees more black lives taken by other blacks, not the police. Why no protest for those lives? New York City is seeing a huge increase in crime and shootings, and Mayor de Blasio responds by cutting the police budget by $1 billion. This is progressives exhibiting extreme insanity. Anyone who thinks that the Black Lives Matter organization is simply a spontaneous group of poor black people who, on the spur of the moment, gathered in the same places at the same times with pre-printed signs and T-shirts is a fool. This is a Marxist effort to destroy our country. Ignorant progressives have donated millions of dollars to Black Lives Matter and blindly follow their lead. These donations do not go to help the black community. 71% of that money goes to salaries and benefits for the elites in the Black Lives Matter movement. Hundreds of thousands of unborn black children are killed each year in the abortion mills of Planned Parenthood, and thousands die at the hands of black thugs each year without any notice at all from Black Lives Matter. It seems that the Black Lives Matter organization is intent on keeping their protests going until at least after the November elections in an effort to keep Donald Trump from being reelected. What began as legitimate and nonviolent protests over the killing of a black man by a white police officer quickly turned into the inevitable riots, looting, and burning. Some people were hurt, and some died. Businesses were destroyed, and all the while, progressive mayors and governors stood by while the useful idiots destroyed parts of their cities. These officials in lawless places like Seattle and Minneapolis, among others, now have the unmitigated gall to call on American taxpayers to repay them for the damage done by their incompetence. President Trump should say no, firmly and finally. Let them reap what they allowed to be sown by those anarchists. When the first brick or Molotov cocktail was thrown, the police should have been sent in with orders to break up the rioters and arrest them. Stiff penalties should have ensued. But panty-waist mayors, like those in Seattle and Minneapolis, prevented the police from doing their job. Predictably, once these low-life thugs saw that they had free rein to pillage and burn, they were joined by others who wanted to be a part of this jolly party. Young black men were the vast majority of looters, breaking windows and grinning at the cameras as they fled the stores. But make no mistake, these continuing protests are being led by the real useful idiots, white college-age kids, who have been taught to hate their country by people we pay to educate them. That education is indoctrination, from former hippies of the radical 60s who are now guaranteed their teaching positions through tenure. They say and do the most outrageous things, but still keep their jobs. Some even call for killing white people. And these are not just black professors, and not just men. Some of the vilest language and threats are coming from black women in teaching positions. As for the white protesters, they see nothing wrong with blocking streets and even interstates. The more they can inconvenience innocent people, the more joy they seem to receive from it. When your actions inconvenience or harm others, it can no longer be called a peaceful protest. These so-called protesters enter private property with threats to kill homeowners and set fire to their homes. They encircle cars with innocent people inside, some with children, and use vile language to threaten the occupants. Many times they pound on the cars, break windshields, and even turn the cars over and set it on fire. When confronted, which rarely happens, these thugs claim to be peaceful protesters and even victims. The mainstream media and activist judges aid and abet these hooligans by pretending that their actions are harmless. They want to impose upon us the law of the jungle rather than the law of the land. Ask yourself this. If you find yourself surrounded in your car or on foot by maniacs screaming at you and threatening to kill you, what would you do? They're blocking your car, so you're captive to their whims. If you sit quietly and hope for the best, you're at the mercy of the mob. If you try to drive away and one or more of them are hurt, the media portrays you as the aggressor. But better to be thought of as an aggressor by liberal reporters than to lose your life. Imagine children in a car surrounded by these bad, bad people. That will haunt them all of their lives. And there is no satisfying these protesters. They demand justice, but when the arrests are made, they want immediate executions. Justice takes time, and everyone is entitled to justice under our laws, not justice as determined by the mob. These people are out to destroy American culture. Cancel culture is exploding across the country with predictably disastrous effects. First, the statues of the Confederacy started coming down. Not lawfully, but by mob action. Even among those who declared this to be justified and overdue, voices warned that it wouldn't stop there. If removal by riot were to become the modus operandi. In fact, it did not stop there. In the aftermath of the George Floyd and Rayshard Brooks protests, riots, and civil unrest, other monuments have come under attack in cities across the country, including statues of U.S. presidents George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ulysses S. Grant, and Theodore Roosevelt. National anthem author Francis Scott Key, explorer Christopher Columbus, and British Prime Minister Winston Churchill, who legitimately battled fascism. They destroyed monuments to black soldiers and even toppled Frederick Douglass. Vandals also have defaced or destroyed memorials of slavery abolitionists, fallen World War I and World War II soldiers, Mahatma Gandhi, and Armenian genocide, and America's first responders. The violence is senseless, ignorant, and indiscriminate. The cries of the mobs have taken on the tone of a cult. It is heresy, blasphemy, to point out any good these historical figures have done. Grant led the Union Army to victory in the Civil War to end slavery. And as president, Grant aggressively went after the Ku Klux Klan. That earned him nothing in the eyes of these radical protesters. Roosevelt broke up monopolies and gave us the national park system. The subject of statuaries are to be judged only by their sins. Those in the mob have apparently believed that they have lived saintly lives, and that entitles them to pass judgment on others. Everything must now be viewed through the lens of the new proletariat uprising. Allegiance must be sworn to the new edicts. Homage must be paid to those declared martyrs. Loyalty oaths and purity tests are administered on social media. Those falling short are condemned and publicly shamed. The accoutrements of their utterly ordinary lives ripped away. So what is falling short? Apparently it's asking for investigations before jumping to conclusions, pointing out the dangers of overreactions, and defending protests while condemning riots, violence, arson, and general destruction of property. Even saying nothing has been twisted to be an offense. Signs reading, "Silence is violence," meaning not defend principles of safety and equality for all, but admit your individual guilt and agree with our confiscatory and redistributionist revolutionary ideals as redress for what we're now calling systemic racism, in order to hold you personally culpable. Does this ideological extremism describe everyone seeking police reform and equality for minorities in this country? Certainly not. But it does describe the most vocal, those whose views are dominating the 24/7 news cycle in the United States and elsewhere. These demands emanate not only from the left's intelligentsia, but also from the insurrections in places like Seattle, Portland, New York City, and Washington, D.C. Seattle, in particular, has shown us, yet again, what the radical left produces when it gets autonomy and control. Warlords, violence, shootings, and mob justice. In short, complete chaos. But more traditional Democrats have stood back and let the violence take place or been conspicuously silent about it. Joe Biden is running to be our next president, but he has not condemned the violence or those provoking it. He wants their votes in November, and so he remains hidden in his basement without taking a stand. Where are Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer as the violence escalates and the calls for defunding the police become louder? They are happy to remain silent, at least until they get the votes from these progressive provocateurs in November. The radical left is driving this bus, but more traditional Democrats have stood back and let violence take place and have been conspicuously silent about it. Some conservatives have been only too happy to pile on too. Talk show host Jesse Kelly and author Ann Coulter have decided to hoist the left on its own petard. They started calling for Yale University to change its name, as its founder, Elihu Yale, was not only a slave owner, but a slave trader. There are also calls from the right for equal treatment by demanding that Harvard, Duke, Georgetown, Rice, Stanford, William and Mary, and others change their names. Kelly and Coulter are, of course, being provocative to make a point. No doubt it's amusing to witness progressive faculty members and alumni from these schools defend the racist roots of their cushy alma maters. This same phenomenon is playing out by finding past incidents of blackface and the N-word used by Hollywood celebrities and the governor of Virginia. Whoopi Goldberg was caught in whiteface makeup. But all this assumes that the intellectuals supporting societal upheaval will somehow be in charge of it. And any student of revolution can tell you that that's not how it plays out. The high-minded who call for revolution quickly lose control to thugs with less delicate sensibilities who carry out the destruction and bloodshed that almost inevitably follows. That mob that took control of a six-block area of downtown Seattle is a prime example. It only took them a few days for the shootings within their midst to begin. These are Marxists who see the current unrest as their opportunity. They won't sit back and say, "Yale? Destroy a storied institution? No, we don't want that." They will sit back and happily see every college, building, statue, and institution in America destroyed. That's what they want. Do we really want our universities burned to the ground to make a gotcha point? The answer had better be no, because it won't stop there. It will spread to every school, every business, every hospital or charitable organization funded or founded by anyone who has ever been successful. There is not a person alive or dead who can survive this kind of condemnatory dogpile, especially once it becomes a political tit-for-tat. A quote attributed to George Washington compares government to fire, a dangerous servant and a fearful master. But what we're starting down today isn't government, it's anarchy. And it isn't just fire, it is wildfire. Those who pour gasoline on it for their own amusement cannot be shocked when it turns and consumes them too. We have to put out the fires, not feed them. Once the situation has calmed down, then we should aggressively try to weed out those in every industry who spread ignorance and promote destruction. We do that not with violence, but with our voices, our votes, and our money. Stand up for our founding principles. Call out and vote out those who don't. And most importantly, stop funding them. If we lack the fortitude to do that, if we continue to think the wildfire will do it for us, then we have little chance of surviving what's coming next. Make no mistake, all of this unrest involves money. Some people who have worked for it and have it, others want to take it from the successful without the hard work. It's called reparations. There is a fundamental presumption in law that if you were not in any way a participant in an act, you cannot be culpable for it. On the other hand, if you were aware of it and had the opportunity to stop it but did not, you can be held responsible. In the June 9th edition of Wall Street Journal, Arif Haider Ali, an adjunct professor of law at Georgetown University, declared that international law demands reparations for American slavery. He argued that, quote, "The prohibition against slavery has now been achieved, from which no derogation is permitted. This is the highest level status in international law, and it means retroactive responsibility may be imposed on those who violated that norm." Ali stated that this is how the Nazis were persecuted at Nuremberg, retroactively, for crimes against humanity. Well, of course they were, because the persons on trial committed the crimes in question. That's why all crimes are properly punished that way. The guilty person, the one who actually did the deed, is tried, convicted, and punished. Let's revisit Ali's statement. If I enslaved another person, then released them from slavery, under Ali's premise, I should pay reparations for the period of slavery. So far, we have no disagreement. If I did the deed, I pay the freight. But then Ali makes a massive jump. Three jumps, actually. The first is that he completely ignores current slavery worldwide, particularly in Islamic societies. The second is closer to home. He states that the United States is bound by international law. This is a stunning statement by someone whose primary employer is just blocks from the White House and a similar distance from the Supreme Court. The highest law in the United States is the Constitution, not international law. We hear the term international law frequently from commentators on foreign policy. They treat it as if it had reality, but it is legal fiction. The United States is not a member of the International Criminal Court in The Hague, so any rulings of that court have no bearing on matters inside the United States. The final leap by Ali is that he established no connection between any living person and an institution that ended over 150 years ago. Every example of reparations Ali proffers is one that is in immediate proximity to both events and perpetrators. Not one of his supposed examples is remotely similar to the American experience. And we have already paid proper reparations in both temporal and spatial proximity. The Southern Democrat who wrote the Jim Crow laws are no longer alive. Bull Connor is dead. Almost all of those who killed freedom riders are also gone. And there have not been any ex-slaves around for decades. So how far back would Ali and progressives take us? Would they force descendants of African slaveholders to pay the bill for the slaves sold into the Triangle Trade centuries ago? And why should I, the descendant of Europeans who never held a single slave, be forced to pay for anything? The law does not allow a person with no direct nexus to a crime to be charged with that crime. It does not allow a person who has not harmed another to be forced to make restitution. Professor Ali is willfully blind in his distortion of legal principles. If I commit a crime, then I have to do the time. But making me pay because my second cousin's girlfriend's great-grandfather knew someone who did something is criminal on its face. No person now living in the United States was ever enslaved prior to 1865. No person living in the United States has had the ability to stop slavery prior to 1865. Whatever atrocities were committed during slavery in the United States were not committed by any living person. And since the law does not permit penalties against innocent persons, reparations are legally untenable. Progressives want to rewrite history, but they cannot change it. We live in the greatest country in the world, bar none. It's not perfect, and it never will be perfect, but it is head and shoulders above any other country in our world. Fighting over the past is foolish. Pretending that Black Lives Matter, with protests and riots over rare instances of a white cop killing a black person while ignoring the many black lives lost to black killers, is willful blindness, and we should recognize it as such. We have a big decision to make coming up on November 3rd. All of the media knives are out looking for the back of Donald Trump. Trump's not been a perfect person. He's not been a perfect president. But he beats the dickens out of what we had before for 8 years with Barack Hussein Obama and Joe Biden. And we look now at Joe Biden, who is in the early stages of dementia. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. It's not Biden you would be voting for. And for heaven's sake, what has he done to cause you to vote for him? What you'll be voting for is whoever Biden takes on as his vice president. Right now, that's beginning to look more like Kamala Harris. Google that name, Kamala Harris, and check into her background. That would be the president of the United States. And even if Biden doesn't last but a little time, he has shown nothing in his past that tells us he would go after this lawlessness we are seeing today. I find it very hard to believe that people are seriously considering putting Joe Biden in the White House, soon to be replaced by his vice president, keeping Nancy Pelosi as head of the House, and moving Chuck Schumer up to head of the Senate. Democrats would control it all, and pandemonium would ensue. We've seen this picture before. It's an old movie. We cannot trust Democrats. Unfortunately, Republicans don't appear to be able to show us a lot more either. I will vote for Donald Trump if something doesn't happen between now and then that changes my mind, and I don't expect that. My family will vote for Donald Trump. If the Democrats would give us, the American people, something other than Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden to oppose in Donald Trump, then you'd have to at least consider it. But look who they bring out. Old war horses who can't do us any good. I thank you for listening. And someone reminded me that I used to end my commentaries in a way that I haven't in a few days. I'm going back to it. God bless America.